November 27th, 1985, St. Augustine, Florida. While attending a neighborhood social gathering, 12-year-old Martha Jean Lambert tells her mother that she needs to take a brief trip back to their mobile home, but she never returns and is eventually reported missing. Suspicion falls on Martha's 14-year-old brother, David, after he gives conflicting stories about the last time he saw his sister. Over the course of the next 24 years, David makes two separate confessions about killing Martha and disposing of her body. While investigators find David's story believable enough to close the case, he soon recants his confession, and since corroborating evidence cannot be found, Martha continues to remain a missing person. After that, the trail went cold.
Okay, and I want to turn it over to David, because David's got to tell you some things, and then Skip and I are going to be here to support David in telling you these things and answer any questions that you might have. Okay?
Okay. Basically, truth of the matter is, me and Martha went to the old college. And we got into a big argument and fight. And it was over money that she wouldn't give back to me. It was some change out of a $20 bill. She hauled off, punched me. I then, not thinking, I pushed her. She fell backwards, and her head, when she fell backwards, her head impaled on something sharp that was sticking out of the ground.
Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and we've got a pretty unusual missing persons case to cover today. The 1985 disappearance of 12-year-old Martha Jean Lambert. That sound clip you just heard was from an interrogation session with Martha's older brother, David Lambert, who was only 14 years old at the time she went missing. In that clip, which was recorded 24 years after Martha's disappearance, you can hear the beginning of David making a full confession to their mother, Margaret Lambert, in the presence of two police detectives, claiming that he got into an altercation with Martha, which led to her being knocked over and hitting her head. When he discovered his sister was dead, he subsequently covered the whole thing up and buried her body. Well, obviously, this case would not be featured on The Trail Went Cold if that was the end of the story. Even though they never found Martha's body, the police soon announced that they were closing the case and that for various reasons, David would not be charged for his role in his sister's death. Well, the problem is that after this news went public, David immediately recanted his confession, and Margaret would also express her skepticism that his story was true. Indeed, aside from his confession, there was no corroborating evidence that David killed Martha, so for the past decade, opinions about this case have been sharply divided. Some people believe that David is a mentally disturbed individual who made up this entire story for attention, but there are others who suspect that even if the events did not play out exactly as he described, there might be some elements of truth to what David said, and he still knows exactly what happened to Martha. Unless new information should surface, the police investigation into Martha's disappearance will officially remain closed, but regardless of whether or not David's story is true, that doesn't change the fact that she is still a missing person after all these years and deserves conclusive answers. So on this episode, we're going to look at both sides and determine the likelihood of whether David really did cause his sister's disappearance, or if something else might have happened. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the disappearance of Martha Jean Lambert. Our story begins in St. Augustine, Florida in 1985, and our central figure is 12-year-old Martha Jean Lambert. Martha and her two older brothers, 15-year-old Raymond and 14-year-old David, currently live with their parents, Howard and Margaret Lambert, but have experienced troubled childhoods. The age difference between their parents is considerable, as Howard is 74 years old, but Margaret is only 33, and Howard is known for being an alcoholic with a violent temper. On previous occasions, the three children have been taken away from their parents and placed in foster care, possibly due to abuse, but at this moment, they are back living with Howard and Margaret at their mobile home on Carey Lynn Road, though neighbors would say they could still hear a lot of loud yelling and fighting from there. Martha is a 7th grade student at Catalinas Junior High School, and while she is described as generally being friendly, she is also shy and has very few close friends. And while she enjoys attending school, her grades are pretty poor, and she is known for showing up there dressed in dirty clothing. But in spite of her volatile father, Martha does seem to have a good relationship with her mother and siblings, and is described as being a peacekeeper between her two brothers. On Wednesday, November the 27th, Martha left school for the Thanksgiving holidays, and was looking forward to spending Thanksgiving at her grandmother's house the following day. That evening, she went to a social gathering at a neighborhood's mobile home, which was also attended by her mother, Margaret. At around 7:30 p.m., Martha told Margaret that she needed to go back home, but she said she would only be gone about 5 minutes. However, Martha never returned, and when Margaret went back to the mobile home, she discovered that her daughter was not there. According to Howard, Martha had stopped by while he was making dinner and asked what time the food would be ready, but he had no idea where she was. The family decided to perform a search for Martha, but when they failed to find her, Margaret contacted the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office, and at 3 a.m. on the morning of November the 28th, deputies arrived to take a missing persons report. The police would perform their own search for Martha, which included looking through a wooded area behind the family's mobile home, but they had no luck finding her either. On the night she went missing, some neighbors recalled having seen Martha walking west on Carey Lynn Road, and there were also reports of a suspicious-looking green van being in the area during that time period, which did not appear to belong to any of the local residents. Since her two brothers both had a prior history of running away from home, police suspected that Martha might have done the same thing, but Margaret did not believe this and feared that her daughter was abducted. However, the police's focus would soon shift towards Martha's brother, David, who would give contradictory accounts about the last time he saw her. At first, David claimed that he witnessed Martha climbing into a black vehicle, but investigators did not believe his story held up. He then said he last saw Martha walking down the street towards the Little Champ convenience store on State Road 207, but would subsequently change his story again. This time, David now claimed that he and Martha had been eating dinner together at their mobile home before she told him she was going out, but when David asked where, she refused to tell him. Margaret also claimed that when she originally returned home that night to discover Martha was missing, she saw David come walking outside and he was laughing for no apparent reason, but would not tell her why. As for Martha's older brother Raymond, his whereabouts that night are not all that clear, though Margaret would later say that she believed he was at church. Both Margaret and David would later tell the authorities about some odd phone calls they received sometime after Martha's disappearance. According to Margaret, She got a call from a young girl who said, quote, "Mom, I'm okay," but Margaret did not believe her voice sounded like Martha's. In David's case, he claimed that Martha phoned him and said she was going to contact the police to let them know she was alive, but this never occurred, and David's story was never corroborated. Martha's disappearance led to increased fighting between Margaret and Howard, which spelled the end of their marriage for good. Howard would pass away at some point, while Margaret moved to Illinois and got remarried. She said she suffered 2 nervous breakdowns over the years, and after her second husband died, she returned to St. Johns County. David and Raymond would both go on to have troubles with the law, and while there isn't much information out there about Raymond, according to a 2004 article in the St. Augustine Record, he, or should I say she, was going by the name Cynthia Jean Lambert at that point. Anyway, for over 2 decades, there would be very little progress in the investigation. In 2002, the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office received a tip that Martha's body was buried by State Road 207, but a search failed to turn up anything. The case would continue to remain at a standstill until the start of January 2010, when investigators went public with a shocking announcement. The case had been officially reopened 6 months earlier by Detectives Sean Tice and Howard Skip Cole, and over the course of the summer and the fall, they would bring in David to be re-interviewed on 3 separate occasions. Well, at some point, David, who was 38 years old, made a full confession that he was responsible for his sister's disappearance. According to David, both he and Martha had been at their mobile home together when their father became angry over the Thanksgiving turkey being burned. This prompted the 2 siblings to leave and walk to the Little Champ convenience store on State Road 207. While there, David gave Martha a $20 bill to purchase some items, and after leaving, they walked to the former grounds of Florida Memorial College, located at the corner of King Street and Holmes Boulevard. The college had relocated in 1968, and all that was left at the site were some dilapidated, abandoned buildings. Since the local children sometimes played there, the site was described as a quote-unquote poor kids Disneyland. While hanging out at the site, David got angry because Martha supposedly did not give him the correct change for the $20 bill he gave her, which he refused to hand over, leading to an argument. Things escalated to the point when Martha punched David in the face, so he responded by pushing his sister. David said this caused her to fall backwards and hit her head on a piece of metal which was sticking out of the ground. Once he checked Martha's body, he discovered that the metal had impaled the back of Martha's skull and her head was gushing blood. David started going into a panic and calling out for help, but no one answered him, and it soon became apparent that Martha was dead. Worried about how his parents would react if they found out he killed his sister, David responded by grabbing a broken piece of a road sign and used it to dig a 3-foot shallow grave, and after burying Martha there, he returned home. Believe it or not, it turned out this was not the first time that David had confessed to causing Martha's disappearance. 9 years earlier, in 2000, David was arrested for passing a bad check, and while in custody, he told police he was responsible for killing his sister and had disposed of her body in a coquina mine on Holmes Boulevard, which was known as the quote-unquote pits. A search was performed of this mine, but Martha's remains could not be found, and since there was no other corroborating evidence to support David's story, he was not charged. However, David's second confession would compel a forensics team to perform a search of the property where he claimed Martha's body was buried. Over the past 24 years, all of the abandoned buildings have been demolished, and the site had turned into an overgrown wooded area sectioned off into 4 5-acre zones. Cadaver dogs were brought to this location and seemed to show a quote-unquote behavioral change when reacting to a certain spot. 2 days were spent excavating the site, but it failed to turn up any trace of Martha. Unfortunately, it was suspected that the extensive demolition work done to the property could have caused Martha's remains to be moved or scattered away, so even if some remains were still buried on the property, it seemed unlikely that they would ever be able to recover them. Well, even though there was no corroborating evidence to support David's confession, Detectives Tice and Cole said they believed his story as they had apparently witnessed him get very emotional and grief-stricken during his interrogation sessions and came to the conclusion that he was telling the truth. However, the state attorney's office declined to file charges against David because at 14 years old, he still would have been a minor at the time the alleged incident took place, and if the details of his story were accurate, the crime he would have committed was manslaughter, not murder. According to a media release, quote, "Changes in the law since 1985, statute of limitations, the suspect's age at the time, and other mitigating circumstances would preclude charges from being filed," end quote. So even though Martha was still technically a missing person, investigators now consider the case to be closed. Well, shortly after the announcement of David's confession was made public, Margaret stated that she did not believe it. She claimed that her son had always been very protective of Martha and had a history of emotional problems and issues with drugs, and he had a tendency to often make up stories to get attention. Margaret still believed that Martha was the victim of an abduction, and at one point, she had even presented a theory that whoever kidnapped Martha may have threatened David into remaining silent about what actually happened. Well, shortly after his mother expressed her skepticism about his story, David suddenly went public to completely recant his confession. He described himself as, quote-unquote, mentally incompetent, and claimed that he felt great pressure while being interrogated by detectives Tice and Cole, eventually reaching the point where he just decided to tell them what they wanted to hear. David now maintained that he had no involvement in Martha's disappearance and no idea what actually happened to her. In spite of David's recantation, the police still believed that he was telling the truth when he made his confession and felt that the emotion he displayed could not be faked. They still officially consider the case to be closed, but since they have Martha's DNA and dental records on file, they have said they would reopen the investigation should new information ever surface. However, without a body or any other evidence, the truth about what actually happened to Martha Jean Lambert remains a mystery. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Now, this is definitely a unique story for us to cover, because in the minds of some people, the trail has not gone cold. I realize that there are some missing persons cases in which the victims are never found, but there is still some semblance of a resolution because enough evidence exists to charge a suspect with the victim's presumed murder. Here, we do not have a body, but we do have a confession, which investigators thought was convincing enough that they decided to close the case. However, since the confession was made by someone who, for various reasons, cannot be charged with any crime, this makes for a pretty unsatisfying resolution. I mean, it would be one thing if there was corroborating evidence to back up David Lambert's confession, but there really isn't, and the situation is further complicated by David's recantation. If you look up any online discussions about this case, I'd say that reactions are pretty split about whether or not David was actually responsible for Martha's disappearance, and even if he was, there's a lot of skepticism about whether the events actually played out as David described. In an article published in the St. Augustine Record, Detective Sean Tice addressed these concerns by stating, quote, "We have 23 hours of video. If someone wants to sit down for 2 or 3 days and watch it, then have at it. And if you can draw another conclusion, God bless you," end quote. Well, unfortunately, I don't have access to all 23 hours of David's multiple interrogation sessions, but one 56-minute clip is available for viewing on the official St. Augustine Record YouTube channel, and of course, you heard a brief snippet from it at the beginning of this episode. This particular session was recorded on November the 13th, 2009, and it features David in an interrogation room alongside Detectives Tice and Cole. And while you can't actually see her on camera, David and Martha's mother, Margaret, is sitting across the table from him. It's obvious that David made his original confession on a previous occasion, and they make reference to recently having performed their search for Martha's remains. This entire 56-minute clip is unedited, which means there are a few sections of people literally sitting around in the room doing nothing. Near the beginning, the two detectives take David out of the room for a private, off-camera conversation, which lasts 6 minutes, and when they return, David finally tells his mother what he did to Martha. Well, the whole situation comes across as a bit odd, because it took place about a month and a half before news about David's confession went public. Margaret cries and becomes emotional during the session, and at one point, the detectives ask Margaret if she believes David's story. She said that she does, but that it will take her a while to process the whole thing. Yet almost immediately after police announced they were closing the case, Margaret did a complete 180 and publicly expressed her belief that the confession was false. And right after that, David did the exact same thing. David had also implied that the main reason he hid Martha's body and kept such a big secret all those years is because he was frightened about how his parents would react if they found out he killed her. Watching the footage of David's confession, you do get the sense that this is a bit therapeutic for him and Margaret, and they appear to be finding some peace about finally getting this out in the open. Yet less than 2 months later, they would both completely undo all this. Now, I'm sure you know that there are many documented cases out there of innocent people being manipulated by police into confessing to a crime they did not commit. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but I would definitely be interested to know what David and the two detectives were talking about during the 6 minutes they stepped outside the room before he told his mother about what happened. David had already confessed to them by this point, and I get the impression that they wanted to give him the opportunity to share the whole story with his mother before this news went public. However, what's not clear is if David's legal situation had been decided by this point, and if they knew whether or not he was going to be charged for what happened to Martha. After all, they had already completed their search for Martha's body and found nothing, so other than his confession, they really didn't have any evidence to make a case against David. It's also worth mentioning that at one point during this clip, they name a man who Margaret had once believed was responsible for Martha's disappearance. I'm not going to repeat his name, since I have no idea who he is, though he may have been one of the Lamberts' neighbors. Detective Tice then tells David that during a future session, they're going to talk about sexual abuse, and he mentions this man's name. It's strongly implied that this man abused all three of the Lambert children, but without knowing any additional information about this, I have no idea if it has any relevance to this case. The only thing this interrogation session does make clear is that the Lamberts appear to be a very troubled family who have experienced a lot of trauma during their lives. Anyway, before we talk about this confession any further, we have to start from the very beginning. Details about Martha's early life are sketchy, but it is unsettling to hear that both she and her brothers spent time in foster care when they were younger, possibly due to allegations of abuse. There are no specific details about what exactly happened, but all three kids were allowed to go back living with their parents again, even though it still sounds like there was constant strife within the family. One part of David's story I don't find too unbelievable is the idea that he feared that his parents would kill him if they found out he killed Martha. One of the biggest red flags was the 41-year age difference between Howard, who was 74 years old at that time, and Margaret, who was only 33. If you do the math, this means that Margaret was only 18 years old when she gave birth to her first child, Raymond, and Howard would have been 59. There's not a ton of information available out there about Howard, since he's been deceased for a long time, but it sounds like he was an alcoholic and had a violent temper. Knowing all this, I find it troubling that there isn't much discussion about Howard's whereabouts on the night Martha went missing, and his possible role in what may have happened. The story goes that Martha was at a neighbor's social gathering with her mother when she said she was going to quickly run home and be back in 5 minutes, but of course, she never returned. It's been reported that when Martha returned to her mobile home, she asked her father when dinner would be ready before she left again, and since Martha wouldn't have been able to confirm this story herself, I'm assuming this is what Howard or David told the police. It sounds weird that Martha would make a special trip home just to check that dinner was ready, but this was Thanksgiving Eve, so I'm guessing that Howard was cooking up a Thanksgiving dinner. Now, the story David provided during his confession was that Howard became angry when the turkey was burned, which is what compelled David and Martha to leave and walk over to the convenience store, but of course, we have no idea if this version is true. Other than that, there isn't much out there about Howard's alibi, so I don't get the sense that police ever considered him to be a serious suspect. I mean, it doesn't sound like Howard was a very nice man, but he was also 74 years old, so if he harmed Martha, it might have been difficult for him to dispose of her body so thoroughly that she hasn't been found in nearly 35 years. The alternate explanation is that Howard could have killed Martha in David's presence and enlisted his son's help with covering it up, but I'm not sure why David would be willing to remain silent about his father's culpability and take the whole rap himself since Howard died a long time ago. There's also very little information out there about Martha's oldest brother, Raymond, though it's been reported that Raymond eventually started identifying as a female, Cynthia Jean Lambert. All we know about Raymond's whereabouts on the night Martha went missing is that Margaret seems to recall him being at church, but David doesn't even remember, so he can't be 100% certain. But Margaret did say that she felt both her sons seemed devastated about Martha's disappearance. At the very least, I'm guessing that Margaret has witnesses from the neighbor's social gathering who can account for her whereabouts until she went home and discovered Martha was gone. I'm not sure what exact time Margaret arrived home, but some people have taken it as a red flag that even though the family supposedly spent some time searching for Martha on their own, they waited until 3 a.m. to report her missing. That could be seen as an indication that the entire family was complicit in what happened to Martha and used this gap of time to dispose of her body and fabricate a cover story. It's also been reported that when police performed a search of a wooded area located behind the Lamberts' mobile home, Margaret said she didn't understand why they were doing this because she was convinced Martha had been abducted by a stranger, a narrative that Margaret has never wavered from these past 3 decades. This could be construed as the family having their own reasons for not wanting anyone to search the woods, though the authorities never found anything. During the initial stages of the investigation, police did explore the possibility that Martha was a runaway, as her brothers did have a prior history of running away, but I really don't think that applies here, as Martha was dressed in a 2-piece bathing suit the last time she was seen. Given the time of year, that might strike some people as odd, but this is Florida we're talking about, and from what I heard, it can still be warm enough in November for people to be out in bathing suits. So I definitely think the most logical theory is that Martha was the victim of foul play. While I certainly won't discount the possibility that someone from that family might have been responsible, I'm just not sure Margaret would have been involved. She technically had the best possible outcome just drop into her lap when David confessed to being the sole perpetrator and police announced they were closing the investigation. If Margaret was complicit, why would she attempt to refute this by publicly stating she did not believe David's confession? Sure, David may have been safe from ever being charged with anything because he was a minor at the time, but Margaret was not. Theoretically, if investigators uncovered any new evidence to suggest that Margaret played some sort of role in her daughter's disappearance, she could still possibly be charged. If she was involved, all Margaret would have to do is accept the decision and move on, rather than denouncing her son's confession. Yes, parents can sometimes go to great lengths to protect their children, but in this case, there was nothing to protect, since David was not going to face any prison time. It's also interesting how Margaret mentioned that David was laughing when she returned home that night and would not tell her why, which she found very odd. I mean, that detail might be completely meaningless and have no relevance to Martha's disappearance at all, but why would Margaret have volunteered this information if she knew her son was complicit? And it's such a strange detail to begin with that I'm not sure Margaret would have made it up. Of course, David had already raised some red flags during the initial investigation by changing his story about the last time he saw Martha on no less than 3 occasions, and it's interesting to look at each version. His first story involved him seeing Martha climb into a black vehicle, which police found no evidence to support. In his second story, he said he last saw Martha walking down the road in the direction of the Lil Champ convenience store, which is interesting, since he would later say that he went to that store with Martha during his confession. And David's third story, about Martha leaving their mobile home after they ate dinner together, seems to contradict all the other versions, since Martha apparently stopped there and left before dinner was ready. I think one aspect of this case, which doesn't get discussed enough, is David's first confession after he was arrested for passing a bad check in 2000. There was an extensive article published about this case in the St. Augustine Record in 2004, and what's odd is that they mentioned David contacting the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office to talk about the case 4 years earlier while he was on probation for drug charges, but there's nothing about his alleged confession or the search that was performed at the Coquina mine where David said he disposed of Martha's body. Since they never found anything, and there was no evidence to support David's story, they declined to file charges against him, so that's probably why this information was not released publicly at that time. But herein lies the problem. Since they also never found any corroborating evidence to support David's second confession in 2009, why was it deemed to be believable enough to close the case? What makes this confession so much more convincing than the previous one? The rationale provided by Detectives Tice and Cole is that David got so emotional when sharing his story that they had a hard time imagining that he could be faking it, and I will concede Tice's point that if I were to watch all 23 hours of their videos of the interrogation sessions, I might look at his confession differently. But it's also possible that the main reason David got so emotional is because he is genuinely guilt-ridden about what happened to Martha, but he is still not telling the full truth about what happened. The fact of the matter is that there are many aspects of David's story which don't make sense, and the one detail which has always been problematic for many people is the idea that a 14-year-old kid could kill someone and dispose of their body so thoroughly that no hard evidence has ever been found to incriminate him. I mean, I can believe that two immature siblings might have gotten into a fight which escalated out of control and caused one of them to accidentally fall over and suffer a fatal head wound. What I have a hard time digesting is the idea of a panicked 14-year-old having the wherewithal to dig a 3-foot shallow grave with a broken piece of a road sign and bury the body. If this was premeditated murder, that would be one thing, but David makes it sound like a spur-of-the-moment accident which wasn't planned, and he had to improvise quickly in order to cover up what he did. But if he was telling the truth, then I'd really be interested in hearing some more thorough eyewitness accounts from people who interacted with David that night. I know his mother said that David was laughing in an odd way when she arrived home, but was there any sign that David looked dirty or exasperated from having dug a shallow grave? Since David mentioned that blood was gushing from Martha's head after the metal impaled her skull, did he get any of that blood on himself? If so, did he manage to clean it off without anyone noticing? Was he seen changing his clothing or using the shower that night? You might recall that 2 months ago, I released an episode about another case from Florida involving the death of an 8-year-old boy named Demetric Moore. One of the most prominent theories in that case is that Demetric was killed during a violent scuffle with some of the other neighborhood kids, but the key difference is that these kids may have enlisted the help of their parents to cover the whole thing up. I have a hard time believing that someone as young as David could have effectively covered up Martha's death without any assistance from an adult. The closest thing we have to corroborating evidence are some cadaver dogs supposedly changing their behavior during a search of the property where Martha's death is alleged to have taken place, which might indicate that her remains are still buried there. The police's rationale for not finding anything is that so much construction and demolition work was done at that site over the years that Martha's remains could have been moved around and are now unrecoverable. That's certainly possible, but the same piece of property was apparently checked during the original search effort for Martha, and it's pretty surprising that David could have covered his tracks so well that nobody noticed anything was amiss. There are other issues I have with David's story, such as the fact that his altercation with Martha was the result of a dispute over money. He claims that he gave Martha a $20 bill to purchase some items at the convenience store, but then after they went to the site, they got into their fight because Martha would not give him the correct change. Well, in many online discussions I've seen about this case, a number of people have brought up this point. Did the Lamberts seem like the type of family who would be giving out $20 to their children? This was a family who lived in a mobile home, and Martha was often reportedly dressed in dirty clothing, so I think $20 would have been a lot of money for them, and I have a hard time with the idea that one of their teenage sons would be carrying around that kind of cash. Since David didn't share his story until 24 years after the fact, it probably would have been impossible to verify if he and Martha were at the convenience store together on that particular night. However, since her disappearance likely generated a lot of publicity in the area at the time it happened, if Martha had been seen at the store with her brother right before she went missing, wouldn't someone who worked there have come forward and said something at the time? When you watch the clip of the interrogation session, when David confesses to his mother, he shares the exact same story, which has been published ad nauseum in all the media coverage of this case. I do have to wonder if during his other interrogation sessions, David revealed some details or pieces of information to prove that he had inside knowledge about what happened, which is why the detectives bought his story. Because as it is, there are just too many things which don't add up, and I have to wonder if investigators were a little too overzealous to close the case. All the legal technicalities about statute of limitations and David being a minor would prevent them from having to take David to court and prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he killed his sister. But officially, this would allow them to get an unsolved missing persons case off the books. Regardless of whether or not David is guilty, the whole thing does come across as a major cop-out. There is so much contradictory information on this case, and it's nearly impossible to nail down any concrete details about the exact whereabouts of all the key players during the time period between Martha left her neighbors and when she was officially reported missing. It could very well be possible that her mother's theory was right, and Martha was abducted by an unknown third party who fled the area. After all, we did have eyewitness sightings of a green van in the neighborhood that night, which apparently stood out because it did not belong to anyone who lived there. So perhaps this van's driver was responsible for Martha's disappearance, and all this drama involving David is nothing more than smoke and mirrors. It is a bit weird how Margaret once proposed a theory that someone else may have taken Martha in front of David and threatened him into staying silent about what happened. Well, David is no longer a scared 14-year-old kid, so if this is true, then I don't see why he wouldn't have said something after all these years. But perhaps David did witness what happened to Martha, and if it occurred at the hands of another family member, the trauma and guilt of having to keep a secret for so long eventually caused David to fabricate a story about causing his sister's death. Or maybe David really did kill Martha, but it wasn't a freak accident like he described, and was the result of something much worse, such as an attempted sexual assault. The real truth might be so horrifying that the only way David can confess his culpability is by sharing a fake story, which paints him in a much better light. But again, if David did it, would he really have been capable of covering his tracks so well that no trace of Martha has been found in nearly 35 years? Under normal circumstances, I might be inclined to go with the theory that David's parents helped him cover up what he did, but I have a hard time imagining that David and Margaret could sit together in an interrogation room in the presence of two detectives while David shared a completely false confession which managed to fool them. Part of me just wants to believe that the simplest explanation is the correct one and that David's story is the truth, but man, there's just so much about this case which bothers me, and until Martha's remains can be found, I definitely think it should remain open until there are more conclusive answers. However, even though investigators officially consider the case to be closed, they have stated they would be willing to reopen it if new information ever surfaced. So if you happen to have any information about the unexplained death of Martha Jean Lambert, please contact the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office at 904-824-8304. That's 904-824-8304. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in Tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, from the life of the most famous mystery writer of all time, Agatha Christie, who went missing in 1926, before she resurfaced 11 days later, and there are still a lot of unanswered questions about the circumstances of how and why she disappeared. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Nicole, Ray Ray Shell, Russell Y, Ginger S, Fox, Mary B, Tony R, Claire B, Holly L, and Karen. Thank you all so much for your support. I also just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitra, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold.